Chapter 6 Aftermath. If there is nobility remaining within Conrad's legion, then it is hidden deeply beneath too many layers of twisted lusts, deviance, and disobedience. Their ways are foolish, ill-considered, and a hindrance to the orderly flow of controlled war. The time is coming when the Night Lords must answer for their behavior and be brought back into the doctrine of imperial warfare, lest we lose them to their own deviant hungers. The Primarch Rogel Dorn recorded commentary at the Battle of Galvion, M31. 10 minutes after First Claw had destroyed the wall separating them from the vacuum of space, the four of them stood in the strategium of the Covenant of Blood, arranged in a half-crescent at the base of the Exalted's raised throne. Two of the Atramentar, Malek and Garadon again, Talos noticed, flanked the former captain, their weapons deactivated but held at the ready. The Exalted paid little attention to the mundane aspects of the orbital war now. The beauty of its void dancing was done, and it merely awaited the accolades due for its boldness. For now, the Exalted was content to let its under-officers move the ship into the formations of the larger battle and add the strike cruiser's formidable guns to the onslaught. Battlefleet Krythe was finished. The Resolute and the Sword of the God Emperor were well on their way to becoming burned-out wrecks in orbit around Solus, and the lesser ships were being savaged by the overwhelming firepower of the Warmaster's fleet. The deck shook as the Exalted nodded its acknowledgement down at the four warriors of First Claw.
"Nicely done," the creature said.
Talos was bareheaded. His helm had been mauled in the final escape from the burning sword. When the pull of the void had crashed his head against the breached wall as he was sucked out into space, Zal was limping and favored his right leg. He had almost lost it in the same instant that Talos had narrowly escaped decapitation. And even his enhanced Astartes physiology was struggling to re-knit bones that had almost been reduced to gravel. Sirion and Uzas were physically unharmed, but Sirion's internal organs were still tense and working in frantic heat from the brief time in the void. His warplate had been compromised by an unlucky shot cannon spread that had damaged his chest plate and had needed to hold his breath for several minutes once his armor had vented all air pressure in space. Uzas, with a lucky streak the other three had long begun to curse, was grinning, utterly unscathed.
"You are insane, Vandred,"
Talos spoke up to the command throne on its raised dais. His shaven head was a mess of scabbing and dried blood trails, as his gene-enhanced Laraman cells clotted his blood at the wound on his crown. Immediately the atmosphere soured. Both of the Atramantar brought their weapons to bear. Malek hunched the shoulders of his brutish Terminator warplate, and thick claws slid, crackling with force, from the armor's oversized gloved fists. Garadon's hammer hummed with building energy as it sparked into life. Talos might have been handsome had he been left as a man. With his enlarged Astartes features, he had ascended from the ranks of classical humanity. But there was still something recognizably imposing and inspiring in the way he looked. His black eyes, stony with rage, glared up at the Exalted. And Talos had no idea just how much he resembled a sculpted marble statue from the heathen ages of old Earth.
"What did you say, my prophet?"
the Exalted asked, purring the way a contented lion might.
"You,"
Talos pointed up at the altered figure with Aurum,
"are insane."
The ship shivered under the attentions of Imperial guns. No one paid attention, except for the mortal crew at their stations that ringed the unfolding scene between their masters. The Exalted licked its fangs.
And by what leap of the imagination do you arrive at such a conclusion? Tell us. There was no need for such risks. I heard about Fifth Claw. Yes, a shame. A shame!
Talos almost went for his bolter. His hesitation was evident in his body language, for Malek of the Atramantar stepped forward. Both Sirion and Zal raised their bolters and aimed at the elite guards either side of the throne. Uzas did nothing, though they all heard the chuckling from his helm speakers.
Yes, the exalted said, utterly unfazed by the standoff. A shame. We lost 5 Astartes in a single operation. For the first time in millennia, 10th Company is below half strength. We have never been so weak. 10th Company, the exalted smirked, preening and condescending. 10th Company has not existed for millennia. We are the warband of the exalted. And this night, we have earned much honor in the eyes of the War Master.
The confrontation would change nothing. Talos lowered his blade, letting his anger bleed from him like corruption from a lanced boil. He buried the urge to blood his sword with the life fluids of the exalted. Sensing the change in him, Sirion and Zal lowered their bolters. Champion Malek of the Atramantar stepped back into position, his tusked helm watching impassively.
Fifth Claw is no more, Talos said more quietly. We are in dire need of recruitment. We cannot function for long with barely 40 Astartes.
He let the unwelcome words hang. Every one of them knew the decades of attention and effort recruitment would require. To sustain a company's fighting strength, it needed a great deal of materiel and expertise to gene-forge new Astartes from prepubescent male infants. The Covenant of Blood lacked almost all of what would be required, which was why no recruitment had been done since the Great Betrayal. The remains of 10th Company had been fighting with the same warriors since the Horus Heresy.
Change is inevitable, the Exalted growled. The Shaper of Fate is with us, and it knows the truth of this.
At those words, the Atramantar both nodded their heavy helms in respect. Uzas grunted a monosyllabic sound that could have been respect or pleasure. Talos felt his skin crawl and his dark eyes narrowed.
Who are we to answer the demands of the ruinous ones? We are the Night Lords, the sons of the 8th Primarch. We are our own masters. The Shaper of Fate demands nothing, the Exalted said. You do not understand.
I have no wish to understand the entities you are enslaved to.
The Exalted smiled, patently false, and waved a clawed gauntlet.
I am tired of reminding you, Talos. I control this. Now leave, before First Claw joins Fifth in no longer existing.
Talos shook his head at the threat, disgusted it had even been made, and smiled back before stalking from the strategium. Once they were outside the bridge, Sirion voxed to Talos.
He is worse than before. As if that was possible. No, brother, his fear. I can feel it boiling beneath his skin. He is losing the fight with the demon that shares his body.
Septimus and Eurydice were still in the port hangar bay. The Thunderhawk blackened, sat on its landing pad. occasional jets of pressurized steam venting from its ports as the raptor-like gunship cooled. The boosters at the rear of the troop-carrying attack ship matched the gunship's name, the engine exhausts charred from decades of orbital and suborbital flight. Septimus was diligent in ensuring Blackened remained in as good a condition as could be expected, but he was an artificer first and foremost, not a tech priest. His skills lay in repairing and maintaining the Master's weapons, not keeping an ancient gunship flying. Eurydice watched the slave as he sat on the deck of the landing bay in the shadow of the Thunderhawk, turning his master's skull-faced helm over in his hands.
"This," he said to himself, "is not going to be easy."
It was a miracle the helm hadn't come to pieces. It was severely dented on the left side, where Talos's head had smashed into the edge of the breached wall once the vacuum had pulled First Claw into space. Eurydice said nothing. She was still unnerved by the shaking of the ship, and replayed the last hour over and over within her mind, powering up the Thunderhawk, taking it out into the middle of an orbital battle. Throne, this place was insane. Septimus looked up at her, his jade eyes narrowed. She wondered if his thoughts matched her own. As it happened, they did.
"It's not always that bad," he said without a smile.
She grunted what might have been an agreement.
"Is it ever worse?"
"Often," Septimus nodded.
"If you think the Astartes are bad, wait until we go to the Crodex."
She didn't answer. She didn't want to know. Septimus held up the oversized helm once more.
"I should get started on this."
But he didn't move. He was lingering, she knew. Finally, she bit.
"You're not allowed to leave me alone.
The only way you may leave my presence is if one of us is dead."
Her forehead and her permanently sealed third eye ached with sudden ferocity. It felt as though her warp gaze sought to stare through the steel and slay the foolish, cocky slave before her.
"I hate it here,"
she said, before she even realized she was going to speak.
"We all hate it here,"
he nodded again, speaking slowly, and not just because of his awkward Gothic. He spoke as if stating the obvious to a slow child.
"We all hate it here, more or less. We are worthless to them. They are demigods."
"There are no gods but the Emperor,"
Eurydice sneered. Septimus laughed at that, and his casual blasphemy grated against her.
"You are a heretic,"
she said the words softly but unpleasantly.
"As are you now. Do you think the forces of the throne would welcome you after even a short time on board a traitor Astartes vessel?"
His humor faded.
"Open your eyes, navigator. You are as ruined as the rest of us. And this ship,"
he gestured at the dimness of the launch bay around them,
"is your home now."
She drew breath to argue, and he held up a hand, cutting her off.
"Enough arguing. Listen to me."
He let the skullish helm rest on his lap as he scratched the back of his neck.
"This is the 10th company of the 8th Legion. Thousands of years ago, they would have had serfs and servitors and Astartes enough that me taking a relic Thunderhawk out into the black would have been punishable by death. They lack resources, including the souls to serve them."
"A fitting fate,"
Eurydice smiled coldly.
"They're traitors. You think that smirk you wear hides your fear?"
He met her eyes and stared for several moments.
"It doesn't. Not from me. And definitely not from them."
The smile left her face as quickly as it had arrived.
"I don't deny that they are heretics," Septimus continued.
But let me put it another way. Have you ever heard of Lock 3?
She reluctantly moved to join him, seated on the Thunderhawk's gang ramp in the gloom of the spacious hangar bay. Across the cavernous area, other Thunderhawks sat idle and silent, untouched in years, decades perhaps. Cargo trucks and munitions loaders sat equally lifeless. 50 meters away, a lone servitor lay slack and unmoving on its back, its gray skin rendered grayer by the touch of dust. It looked like it had lost power and collapsed, left there to decay in the presence of these venerable war machines. Eurydice couldn't take her eyes from the corpse. Its skin was withered and drawn tight against its bones, almost mummified, though actual decomposition was probably delayed because of the machine parts fighting off decay in the organic sections that remained. She shivered. It was all too easy to see how this ship was a hollow image of itself. "No," she said at length, taking grim comfort in his body heat as she sat next to him. The Covenant was so cold.
"I've never heard of Lock 3.
"Not much to hear of," he admitted, then lapsed into silence, thinking.
"I've not seen much of the galaxy," she said.
"Sign kept most of our prospecting runs within a handful of sectors to save on journey costs. Also, I..."
"You what?"
"My family, House Mavalian, is on the lowest tier of the Navis nobility. I think Sign was worried about pushing me too hard, worried his navigator was of poor quality."
Septimus nodded. With a knowing look in his eyes, Eurydice didn't like. When she expected him to comment on her confession, he merely cut back to his previous line of conversation.
"Lock 3 is far distant, close to the region of space known to Imperial records as Scarus Sector.
Half the galaxy away.
Yes, I was born there. It wasn't a forge world, but it was close. Manufacturers covered the planet, and I worked as a hauler pilot, ferrying cargo to and from the orbital docks down to the manufactorum that employed me."
"That's nice."
"No, it was boring beyond words. My point should be obvious. Yes, I'm considered a heretic because of my allegiance. Yes, I am indentured to traitors who make war upon the throne of Terra. And yes, there's darkness within this ship that hungers for our blood. But I see things in a realistic light. What I have now is better than death. And once you learn how to walk in the dark places here, it's almost safe. It's almost a real life. I lived a life of repetition, another tiny cog in a vast, dull existence. But this is different. Every week will bring something new, something incredible, something that takes my breath away. Rarely in a good way, I confess."
She looked at him. He was serious.
"You're serious," she said, for lack of anything else to say. "I am. As an artificer and a pilot, I'm given a great deal of freedom on the ship. I am valued."
"A valuable slave."
He narrowed his eyes as he looked at her.
"I am trying to keep you alive. If you don't adapt to this existence, your life ends. It's that simple."
After a long pause, she asked,
"Are you happy?"
"I suspect you think that's a very insightful and cutting remark."
Septimus gestured around the hangar bay again.
"Of course I am not happy. I am a slave to heretical demigods, and I live on a vessel touched by indescribable darkness. The mortal crew lives in fear of the things that stalk the ship's lightless decks, and those things are not always the Astartes.
Septimus chuckled after he said the words, the sound low and devoid of mirth. In his hands, the skull helm grinned up at them both.
So, how did they take you?
Eurydice asked. Septimus didn't look up from the helm.
They attacked Lock 3. I was originally taken to serve as a pilot, and the hypnotic, yes.
Septimus spoke the word a few more times as if tasting it.
I'm not sure if I forgot that word or just never knew it. As I said, Gothic was never my first language. But the process was agony. They teach through mental conditioning and hypnotic implantation programs that burn information directly into the mind. That is why I can fly a Thunderhawk. Though even after a decade, not with the skill of a true Astartes pilot.
She scanned the hangar bay again, imagining how it would look as it should have been. A hive of industry and activity, crew running here and there, servitors and munitions loaders rattling and clanking across the rune-marked floor. The howling of turbines as gunships roared in the moments before launch. It must have been so impressive. It was, she hated to admit it, close to what she'd hoped for herself, guiding the vessels of the Astartes across the stars.
He has you fixing his armor now, she said, looking back to Septimus. Is that a demotion?
Technically, a promotion. Artificers are the most respected serfs in a legion's armory.
She laughed, the sound alien and echoing in the hollow hangar bay.
What's so funny? He asked.
You're not exactly up to your neck in respect.
You only say that, he smiled, because you have not seen everything, Octavia.
Why do you call me that?
Because I am the seventh of my master's servants, and you are the eighth. Not likely. Already your defiance is fading. I hear it in your voice. You're imagining it. That's a shame.
He rose to his feet, the broken helm in his hands.
Because if I am, you'll be dying very soon.
As Talos confronted the exalted, and as Septimus spoke with Eurydice, the last vestiges of the orbital battle played out to their inevitable conclusion. Battlefleet Krythe was annihilated, and the few surviving vessels that managed to flee into the warp are of no further relevance to this record. The most distinguished themselves in their own ways when they merged with other sector battlefleets. Consolidation came next. The War Master's forces had destroyed the Imperial Navy presence in the area, and his fleet hung in the atmospheric reaches above the penal world Solus. The insignia displayed by the vessels of his gathered fleet were myriad. The slitted Eye of Horus marked a full 7 Black Legion vessels, a massive portion of their mighty fleet, while the fanged skull of the Night Lords was evident on both the Covenant of Blood and its much larger sister ship already among the fleet, the battle barge Hunter's Premonition. The majority of the fleet was made up of bulk transports, carrying legions of the lost and the damned, Imperial Guard and planetary defense forces that had turned traitor and sworn allegiance to the War Master's cause across recent campaigns. All in all, the War Master came to Krythe with the capacity to unleash over 2,000 traitor Astartes and more than 1 million human soldiers. Pride of place within the fleet
was given to the vast hulks belonging to Legio Frostreaver, once of the Mechanicum of Mars. A full Titan legion, at the Warmaster's beck and call, numbering almost a dozen god machines of varying classes. Such a chaos fleet was rarely seen outside of the Warmaster's holy wars against the Emperor's worlds, and word of this gathering of the arch-enemy spread throughout the nearby Imperial planets, with fearful talk of a new Black Crusade in the Despoiler's name. With Solace fallen and the Navy crushed, the war for the Krythe Cluster was only just beginning. Long-range scanners told a grim tale, unnerving even for the captains of this lethal battle fleet. The Forge World, Krythe Prime, remained ringed by a vast fleet answering to the Adeptus Mechanicus, which had steadfastly refused to answer Battlefleet Krythe's hails for help. Curiously, the Marines' errant vessel Severance had withdrawn to Krythe Prime to side with the Mechanicus instead of fighting and dying with the Imperial Navy. Time was of the essence, and every officer in the Warmaster's fleet knew it. The Imperium of Man would answer this aggression with fury of its own, and alongside naval reinforcements, Imperial Guard and Astartes armies would be en route from the moment the first astropathic cries for aid had been sent by the beleaguered battlefleet Krythe. The Covenant of Blood pulled close to its kinship, the powerful battle barge Hunter's Premonition. The largest ship had been one of the Legion's flagships before the scattering of the Night Lords over the centuries, and it was an awe-inspiring sight to those who hadn't gazed upon an example of their Legion's strength in many years. Even the Exalted, though he was loath to admit it, felt moved by the sight of the princely vessel, a lance of midnight blue edged in gold and bronze. He wanted it. He wanted command of that vessel, and all upon the deck saw that need burning in his obsidian eyes. The destruction of Battlefleet Krythe was not the only reason the Warmaster had ordered Solace taken first. Just as important as the death of the orbital defenders was the preservation of the population below. Had Lord Admiral Valiant Arventor been more familiar with the archenemy, instead of spending most of his career fighting Eldar raiders, he would have turned the guns of his beloved Sword of the God Emperor on Solace itself, destroying the population centers of the penal world and denying the Warmaster his prize. Ultimately, this would have done much more to save the Krythe Cluster. But of course, he had not. He had died with a sword in his heart, whispering incoherent curses at his murderer. The Chaos Fleet hung in space around a world with almost a million prisoners. Rapists, murderers, heretics, thieves, mutants, and criminals of a thousand other stripes, all held in appalling conditions and discarded by an Imperium that loathed them for their deviance. Within the hour, while the hulks of Battlefleet Krythe were still flaming wrecks in space, the Warmaster's troop ships began their landing. On the surface, hundreds of thousands of potential new warriors watched the skies burn, staring up through the windows of their cells as deliverance and freedom came for them.